From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of October, the last trading day of the month. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will join us from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Daggerville to take a look at the weather forecast for the United States and South America. Oh, and don't forget that if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll be able to hear our Commodity Week program. Of course, it's up online right now at willag.org, or you can listen to it on many of these radio stations over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $5.68 and a quarter. It was up 5.5 cents. The March at 5.76 and a quarter, 5 higher. And May futures at 5.79 and three quarters, up 4 and three quarters. November beans, 2 cents higher. They settled at $12.35 and three quarters. January at 12.49 and a half, up 3.5. And March on a Friday afternoon, up 3 cents at 12.59. Bean meal, $1.70 higher. The bean oil, up 40 cents on the afternoon. Wheat futures, a soft red. December, 7.72 and three quarters, up a quarter. The hard red at 7.85 and three quarters, down 4.25 for the day. Live cattle futures were down $1.05. Feeders were $1.45 lower, and lean hogs were up 87.5 cents. Mike Zuzlow now joins us at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Great to be with you, Todd. Another happy Fall Friday to you, sir.
Better there than here, maybe, because that cloud deck is moving off of you, and hopefully we'll get some sunshine here eventually, and maybe combines will start to roll more full force across the United States for the finish of harvest. I do have a question, though, that's related to the high price of crude oil, and this is only conjecture on my part. Maybe you can help me out. It seems to me that when crude oil prices get high enough in that $80 barrel range, that there is a higher correlation, I don't know whether that's the case or not, to the price of corn, and that you have to be careful about crude giving corn a lift that might be somewhat artificial, or at least watching the price of crude and when it might break.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where the economics have come into play here with the crude oil market going above a certain price, leading the unleaded gas above a certain price, so that your ethanol price is deep discount to the unleaded price. So, for instance, instead of being 20 cents premium to unleaded gas, like ethanol was several months ago, we're now 30 plus cents underneath unleaded gas RBOB. And that just makes it so much more attractive economically to blend that ethanol. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing, is the economic theory is working. We don't have to worry as much about the blend wall. We don't have to worry as much about the policy. And so that's the tie-in from a true supply-demand biofuel mindset, Todd. And then you have the natural tie-in from the investment standpoint of the weaker dollar, stronger crude oil, or vice versa mindset, which is extremely valuable when you have tight supplies of corn. And you throw on top of that, you have limited competition in the form of South America and a little bit less competition than normal in the form of Ukraine. So that those are the two normal ones that we're facing that we're in the middle of right now. You have a third one now present, and it goes back to having these fertilizer prices heading back to levels not seen since either 2012 or even 2008, right before the great financial crisis, the Great Recession. Now you're starting to see the actual correlation, like on a 10-week basis, between corn and natural gas futures go from like a negative 0.4, negative 0.5 to a positive 0.4, positive 0.5. And you could tighten up it to like an 8-week correlation, and it's actually a more positive number. So I think this is one of those weeks, and this is one of those months. The month of October, we saw a very strong, I think, commodity index buying wave come in here. Even though managed funds were reducing exposure, the commodity indexes were picking it up on inflation and on this correlation.
So which commodity do you have to watch to be an indicator of direction then?
What we have seen this past, I'd say, 2 to 3 months is that the crude oil market, by its effect on the dollar, is going to impact the wheat market probably more because there's more competition out there in areas of the emerging markets and European markets that would allow for wheat to come in and take business away from us. That's, I think, happened. I think the weekly export sales showed that. I think the export inspections of 5 million bushels this week showed that. The crude oil also has a very strong relationship with the soybean oil in a biofuel mindset. But you have to realize this time around, we have a Malaysian palm oil and we have several other vegetable oil markets that are also driving the bus too. So crude probably most susceptible in terms of impacting a certain commodity would be probably more in the wheat. And then the wheat, you know, spills over into the corn. Natural gas actually, I think, is taking as much of a role in the corn market as crude oil is right now. But wheat can spill over into the corn eventually.
So natural gas giving corn a lift, and that's part of anhydrous ammonia and just the energy sector in general. And then the weather in the Midwest, is that supportive of the marketplace?
Yeah, I think this is where the harvest numbers, both this Monday and this upcoming Monday, really drew some attention back into the trade on the supply side. I think that's what you're getting at, is we had a pretty lackluster demand side. Beans were pretty good overall with both weekly export sales and inspections, but corn and wheat weren't very good on either of those reports. But we have 9 of 18 states in corn and in beans that are still 70% or less harvested as of Monday's numbers. And I would venture a guess that we're probably not going to get much more than 3, maybe 4% added to that in next Monday's numbers. And so then we're really going to be looking at the next 10 days of weather, because we're turning cold. Are we going to turn even wetter? And, you know, we're talking about, more clients are calling me from Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, talking about needing corn reels at this point. So I think that does attract the market, and that's where your basis and your spreads come in.
Is this all friendly to the marketplace? I mean, everything we've discussed so far, is it simply neutral given the high price of natural gas and corn at this point?
No, it's friendly on the supply side, but it's going to be real negative on the demand side. This seems a lot like 2010, 11, 12 to me, Todd, because Egypt is reportedly hiring Citibank to help with its food prices. It's worried about another food crisis. McDonald's raised their prices, looking maybe to raise their prices again. Caterpillar reported the same thing. Amazon and Caterpillar and other big companies that are commodity related, all talking about the supply chain, all talking about price increases as long as the consumers can tolerate it. So we're wearing the demand down at this point, and we're probably going to see the emerging markets really get weak in terms of their durability with the debt load they're going to have to carry. You know, Egypt, China, all these countries, they're going to have to subsidize here at this point.
Does that mean you're focused more on 2022 sales than 2021?
Well, both. I started on the 22 wheat sales this week, just stepped into it when we crossed over that 770 level. I thought that was a really nice place and gets me above the overvalue level. 22 beans will be right around the corner. I like still going after the 21 in terms of puts. Now, I did pull some bean puts this week just because they're Januarys. They don't have a lot of time. So I don't want to really lose a lot of time decay on them. But as far as the March and on out, I think those are good positions. Or a deep in the money put, you kind of have to not have to worry as much about the time decay.
And corn?
Yeah, the same with corn, only I think the fertilizer issue is going to stick around. My South American colleagues are still telling me we've got issues with the second crop Brazil corn getting enough fertilizer. It's not just going to be here in the United States. And Bloomberg reported this week that Ukraine was slowing down their corn harvest because they didn't have a way to dry, because they didn't have natural gas or propane. So I think corn has that underneath it, the cash market, much more so than the others.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. It's Friday. We always check in with Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, a meteorologist. Thank you, Eric, for being with us today. I do appreciate that. And, oh gosh, I'm looking forward to a really sunny weekend. What can you tell me?
Well, I can tell you that we haven't had very many of those lately. In fact, you know, you and I were just joking before we went on air here that we had, when you look back over the last month, it's as though we had, you know, when you add up all the cloud cover, it's as though the sun didn't shine in Champagne for two straight days. That's how much we've missed out on it. And I've certainly missed it as well. But you know, the thing is we have this big low pressure system that's what we call vertically stacked, which means the upper level low, way up in the jet stream level, is sitting almost on top of the surface low. Now, the good thing is those tend to weaken, but they're slow moving. And this one's going to take from now all the way through the end of the weekend to get from here to Maine. And as a result, we're still sitting under cloud cover. In fact, you know, right now, I just looked, the edge of the back end of this cloud cover is just clearing Kansas City, which means we're going to be dealing with cloud cover throughout the rest of the day today on Friday and even into early Saturday morning. But good news is the rain's going to taper off after today. And we're going to buy several days in a row of some drier conditions, which is overall going to be a good thing.
Yeah, the farmers will enjoy that. By the way, that rainfall managed to help bring up germination on that grass seed I sowed about 2 weeks ago now. It just came up today. First time, but it's up. So maybe we can make it. Speaking of that rainfall, it seems like we've had an awful lot. Do we have stats on how much rain we had in the month of October?
Yeah, you know, I was just looking this up too. And when you look back over the last 30 days, there's a stretch from parts of Illinois through Indiana, southern Michigan, and Ohio. So that section of the Corn Belt, that's looking at between 200 and 300% of normal rainfall on a 30-day time period. Our particular climate reporting district, the one that you and I live in right over here in East Central Illinois, which basically runs from just a little south of Champaign up to about Kankakee, that's our climate reporting district area. It's right now, month to date for October, the second wettest October going back to 1893. So these big rainfall events we've endured, while they've been spread out, thankfully, which has prevented some catastrophic flooding, it's the second wettest that we've got since we've been keeping record. And by the way, those records go all the way back to when the military kept all of the weather records for us.
Now, you mentioned there would be a few dry days. What does the next couple of weeks really look like?
Well, unfortunately, it's going to go cold finally. Well, I don't know if that's unfortunate or not, but we're well past our first frost date. And while we've had a few mornings of patchy frost, you might have seen it on, you know, rooftops of buildings and stuff like that. We're going to actually finally get those temperatures next week down there below freezing several mornings in a row. And the cold air that's coming out, it's substantial. It's parts of the Central Plains, which just yesterday endured a dust storm and high fire weather, we're going to see that same area have temperatures that might be 20 degrees colder than normal in the day 5 through 10 time period. And we're certainly going to be cooler than average around here as well. So good news is with that cooler weather comes higher pressure, and higher pressure means we tend to see the sun more often, and thank goodness, and we also tend to get some drier conditions. And so cold, but dry. And I think that is at least better than cold and wet.
Any indication of what November, maybe through mid-December, might look like?
Yeah, I got some brand new model data just last night on this. And one of the big key indicators, or two of them to talk about, is the water temperatures in the North Pacific and the Gulf of Alaska. They're quite cold. That could continue to support a deeper trough off the West Coast. Now, that keeps the West Coast wet, but occasionally those systems will eject into the plains, which means that the likelihood of us going over to a really dry pattern November into December is very low. I think we're going to continue to see normal weather systems. And I'm going to be honest with you, some of the models, now, you've got to take this with a grain of salt, some of the models are starting to show a little bit of that blue stuff over Champaign, and that blue color denotes one thing, and that's snow. Now, I'm not calling for snow yet, so everybody listen, I did not say it's going to snow, but it's getting cold enough soon that when these systems come through, we could start to be thinking about that, and it's not that far out of the, you know, spectrum of possibility. But the other part of this is the MJO, and the MJO is flip-flopping dramatically on us, and that just means that we will have warm weeks and cold weeks. It'll go up and down, a very volatile temperature pattern from now through the very beginning of winter.
Are we still thinking about La Nina in South America?
Yeah, and La Nina, I just checked yesterday. There is an impressively deep pool of cold water sitting below the surface in the middle of the Pacific. And it will upwell. It'll come up. And when it does, with stronger trade winds, we will probably see this La Nina continuing to strengthen between now and maybe mid-January. So that's really important for our North American weather pattern. It tends to be colder and snowier for us, as an example. But like you said, South America is also going to see this as well. And the main story for South America is It tends to not negatively affect the monsoon that hits Brazil's central and northern growing areas, but tends to affect southern Brazil and Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay. Those regions tend to have greater risk of drought. And that's been a narrative you and I have carried on now for several weeks, and it's just becoming more and more evident as we move forward.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, and helped us to wrap up the closing market report here on Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.